Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin.
You're watching Consider This, the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. One of the many planks in nation-building projects of post-colonial societies is a shared sense of history. Now, this makes official historical narratives tightly controlled, but yet also contested. So tonight on the show, we'll explore this tension with our guest, educationist Dr. R. Senthiram. He's the author of a recent book on Malaysian school history textbooks titled From Decolonization to Ethno-Nationalism. Dr. Senthiram, thank you so much for joining us on the show tonight. It's a pleasure to have you. Let's begin our conversation tonight by maybe talking a little bit about this book and why you chose to begin your analysis from the year 1905, which is, during Malaya's colonial period.
Well, why did I choose to write this book? It is basically, I'm a historian. I'm an educational historian, and I've taught history all my life in schools, in the university. In the university, I've been training teachers how to teach history. And this first part of this thesis itself is my dissertation for a master's program. I submitted it to USM for a master's degree, Master of Education. And then after 30, 40 years sitting back and from 1978 till now, I wanted to see what were the changes that have taken place. It wasn't a complete history of development of history education in Malaysia. There is no book yet on what happened, how did we start, where did we go, how did we end up with this kind of history now that we are struggling to accommodate and use. You see, so if you look at most nations under colonial rule, I think would have followed the same kind of anxieties and problems that we have. During that time, English schools and whatnot just used English history into our curriculum. Everything was in English. And the history itself was English history. If you look at my book on, say, page 28 to 29, you would see the first syllabus of the colonial era. They might have had others, but I was unable to lay my hands on those. The earliest I could go back was this, 1905. And you would see that it's completely UK. It starts off from English history and then up to from the landing of the Romans right down to the Hanoverian period. In between, you have the Tudors, the Stuarts, the Hanoverian period. And then finally, at what we call SPM, at the O levels of Cambridge O levels history, which we all had to sit, it was English political history and the growth of the British Empire. It has got no relevance to the local people's history or anything to do with this. It is completely Europe English history that we're used to.
Yeah, Professor Dave, I can jump in at this point and ask you because, if I understand correctly, you would have been going to school in the 50s, primarily in the 50s, both your primary education and your secondary education sort of straddles, the
It's
colonial period into the period of independence. What is your personal experience of these histories? I mean, you would have studied history in school. Did you
Yes.
feel dominated by it? Did you feel less self-assured as a consequence of studying very Eurocentric history?
Too young an age for me to think along those lines yet. But we just studied European English history. And we thought that is part of the syllabus, part of knowing to reading and writing English and reading about English history. And the English were our colonial masters. We never thought about, is it Eurocentric or do we need to have an autonomous history or a more inclusive history? We never thought about that. We just studied. Only when I came to Form 5, that was in 1960. Even at that point, history was basically still a mixture of Commonwealth history, a little bit of Malaysian history, a little bit of Southeast Asian history, and all this put together. And our main focus at that point in time, naturally with all of us, was to pass the exams. You know, we just studied it. And then when I went into the university, after teacher training and being a teacher, then I joined the university for my arts degree, and I majored in history. That's where we got into this rumble and tumble of, look, is it British history? Is it Eurocentric? How is it that we haven't got our own history out? Those kinds of issues came in very late to most of us, I think.
Right.
We were not alert.
But Dr. Santiram, I'm just wondering then, I mean, I can understand that as a student, maybe you're not thinking about the larger narratives about Western superiority. Mm-hmm. But what, you know, as an academic researching this, as you know, looking back at the progression of the way history has been taught in Malaya and then now Malaysia, what impact do you see these narratives of Eurocentric narratives, of empire superiority, what has that had on the larger Malaysian society?
I think it's kind of very limited in scope, in the sense that history was taught during the colonial times. Only English schools and Chinese schools had primary right down to secondary. The Malay schools and Tamil schools were at elementary levels only, primary level. So they were not exposed to these kinds of, European history or English history, as it were. They were more exposed to Chinese history, Indian history. And the impact this had was, you see, the British, as most of us know, it's a policy of divide and rule, we always say. And so English schools were the ones that provided a kind of primary to secondary to tertiary at that go. And the only way they wanted to introduce English education to the Malays was through the Malay College. The Malay College at the time was the only institution that took in Malay students, but to learn in English so that they will become allies of the British to run the government and the country later, administratively, I mean. You know, so for that purpose, history was local history, and not local history, but history was the history of the British Empire.
So, can I ask you about this, the way in which the underlying assumption of your book, which is that history and historical narratives in school books and perhaps in other instantiations of that are about creating a worldview for the person who's receiving these narratives. And that worldview during the early period was one of perhaps not, racial superiority, but certainly the idea that democracy or progress looked like what the West was going through. What is it about the Western worldview, do you think, that was in those history books that was readily absorbed or maybe even rejected by those who were reading those histories?
No, we were limited by what was available to us. That, I think, and we were very comfortable with this, learning so much of British history and British Empire history. And we thought that was the history worth learning. And Malaysian history or Malay history or Malayan history had no place in this, or we didn't have a proper record of things, because everything was written in Bahasa Melayu, for instance, those days. And the books were not readily available. So we were just concentrating on English history. And that was part of the policy of the colonial government, to provide English education. And the easy way out is to provide English colonial history, to show them how they, as empire builders, had come on to this level to occupy our lands here in Malaysia and move forward, and prompted us to read their history and understand them better, so that we also became the civil servants or top administrators or the lowly clerks and whatnot through the medium of English, through our proficiency in English, because we had to interact with the colonials.
Right. So at what point did it start to change then, Dr. Santiram? I mean, you say that, perhaps in the early days during the colonial period that was the case, but at what point did you start to notice a shift, particularly in Malaysian history textbooks, about the teaching of history that perhaps had a different narrative than the one that we had seen previously with Eurocentric views?
But I think the shift came about in the 1960s. The awareness that we should not have, we should have our own histories instead of being dependent on the colonial history for our history subjects. So there was this move, which was spearheaded by the history department of the University of Malaya. It was, because that is the only university that was in this country at that time when I was in school and in the university. And we could see that they were the ones who spearheaded this move to say, look, we must have indigenous history as well. And so that started this writing of the historiography itself changed. Instead of everyone looking at British administrative systems and British rule and British trade conditions and things like that, they then now began to look at Malay history as it were, as local history. That came about in the early 1960s, and it has got to go its way before it trickles down to the ministry and then back to the schools in terms of an altered history syllabus. So you would imagine that this is the elite in the university at that time, the professors like Professor Wang Gungwu or the late Professor Ku Kee Kim and Bonnie and all quite a lot of people were there, and Zain Labidin Wahid. All these people are the ones who started to write and talk about this indigenization of Malayan history. Then only is that you get a corpus of literature and texts for the history writers, history textbook writers to fall back on. So you would see that even in the 1959 and 66 periods when history was, syllabuses were brought out by the Malayan government at that time, that they were still struggling to put in what is Malay history. There weren't enough materials. It was still the aims of history teaching in the history curriculum were very excellent. They talked about development of national consciousness, unity, this, that, and the bringing about an awareness of our heritage and all that. But the details is in the devil is in the details. When it comes to the details of the textbook, there weren't.
And I wonder if we can also add in the question of the Borneo territories, because Sabah and Sarawak, together with Singapore, the Federation in 63, and Sarawak kind of uniquely had a white Raja. So in a very, very different from the experience of colonial Malaya with its federated and unfederated states, and then because Sabah has its own trajectory as well. I mean, to what extent was there a consciousness of bringing in Borneo history as Malaysian history?
That's true. Yeah. That step was a bit slower. It came about in the 1978 rewriting of history syllabus. It was very cursory, in effect. In fact, there were complaints from the Sarawakians and Sabahans that not enough of their states was in the history textbook. It came out very clearly. But the effort, at that point, I think the main interest in Malaysia was, look, we must get Malay history out first properly before we embark on getting Sabah and Sarawak in. So after 1978, then you see Sabah and Sarawak featuring prominently in history textbooks. Even the latest one in 2017, you have a few chapters, at least two, three chapters, I think, on Sabah, Sarawak history, early colonial history. But the idea is, the idea of Malayan history textbook writers and the Ministry of Education is, look, all those is colonial history. We want to talk about the social cultural history of Malaya. That's more important.
On that note, Dr. Santhiam, we're going to take a quick break, but let's come back and continue our conversation, particularly about that period. I think it's very interesting in the way history textbooks have shifted. We're going to take a quick break, but we will be right back. So stay tuned to Consider This. Hi, thanks for staying with Sharad and I on Consider This. Let's continue our conversation with Dr. R. Santhiram, author of the book From Decolonization to Ethno-Nationalism, which studied Malaysia's school history textbooks between 1905 to 2020. Dr. Santhiram, you know, I'm wondering how difficult events in Malaysia's history are covered in school textbooks. You know, I'm thinking about the 13th of May 1969, particularly because in that post-69 period was also when we had the national cultural policy. I'm wondering how that in particular changed the view of how history had begun to be taught in schools.
Since you mentioned the national cultural policy, that was also a topic that was debated upon in Malaysia by the various ethnic groups. And this debate about what is Malaysian culture? And in the process, you would find in 1986, history got dragged into it. Look, then they had relooked at history and said, this history is not Malayan history as such. And what happened was in 1987, the then Minister of Education, Anwar Ibrahim, made a very, very pertinent statement that became like, this is what we wanted to redo our history syllabus. See, because he mentioned that the school's history curriculum be revised to make it explicitly clear that the present-day Malay political supremacy was based on Malay history and on the premise that Malays were the original inhabitants and that their position could not be challenged. That was a statement out by Anwar Ibrahim, and the curriculum developers took that on board and started moving out the aspects that are not Malay in Malaysian history. So they left out the early history of Malaysia had, for instance, like the Hindu influence in Kedah and Perak. That was very extensive. If you look at what the records that are around, the Hindu influence under the Hindu Buddhist influence under the the Chola kingdoms and whatnot, it is very extensive. There were about 30 to 40 sites along that Bujang Valley and Sungai Muda and Sungai Batu, or Sungai Muda, that is, and also along the Perak coastline. There were all these settlements there, and there have been artifacts and whatnot have been excavated. But this is all being denied in the history textbook, so not mentioned at all.
Professor Santhiram, was it an explicit call to purge pre-Islamic Malay history and culture and society from the curriculum to exclude? I mean, there's some other very famous historical characters like, you know, the Admiral Heredia and in his contributions to the experience of Malacca, for instance. I mean, or was there an explicit call to purge all this history?
It was these kinds of statements that were officially transmitted to the curriculum committees that decided on what history should be. This, in fact, this was taken as a very pertinent statement to say that Islamic and Malay-centric history is what this country wants. Not we bring in the other ethnic groups and talk about their ethnicities, their progress and their contribution to Malaysia as well. So you should have to look at it that way. If you were asking for whether there was an explicit document which says, do this, there was not. It was these kinds of statements coming from the minister right down that they had taken it upon themselves. I think the curriculum developers became very enthusiastic and they wanted to fulfill Anwar's statement by doing this.
Dr. Santhiram, was it just Anwar Ibrahim as education minister that was kind of pivotal to that shift, or was that something you had seen before and after that?
No, a lot of people think so, that it was this statement that pushed history textbook writing to the pro-Islamic Malay centricism. It was that. Because even though earlier it was, we wanted to look at Malaysian history as Malaysian history, not just Malay history. That was why you find all the earlier, this is also, I think, in line with the, in the early 70s as well, there was the revival of Malay consciousness. You know, they, in terms of the newfound national revival, aimed at reasserting the identity as the original settlers of Malaya. That became, came to the fore, that this, and at the same time, you get what is known as the Islamic fundamentalism coming out of Iran. And so that, these two things meshed up together to say, look, we will have to focus on Islamic history and Malay history. That is how it shifted.
Yeah, so this is interesting because in one sense, you recognize the need for a corrective from that early colonial period and even the kind of residual colonial kind of curriculum that existed even in the post-colonial period. And then comes along this idea that of, you know, anchoring our history in the narratives that are central to the Malay political community. And it's, you know, it's identity. So Islam being part of that. Why is this inadequate? Why shouldn't we take this as the adequate corrective to that former state?
Let me explain it to you in this way. I think there are two types of nationalists in Malaysia fighting. Even now, you can find it. One is the nationalists who think that they belong to the civic territorial nation, which is we are citizens on universal citizenship rights and whatnot. We are citizens. Our history must take into account. There is the other group which looks at which belongs to the genealogical ethnic nation. They attach their legitimacy to say their to ancestry. Cultural symbols and historical memory, and say, look, this, our history must be more important. So this battle has been going on for a long time. Right. But would you want to read only Malay and Islamic history at the expense of not knowing what, we are citizens of this country. The non-Malays, the Chinese, Indians, we are citizens of this country.
Right.
We are not Pendatang. Pendatang all have gone back. They were not given citizenship. They went back. I always take that view. We are citizens. So treat us with some respect and honor. You see, if I may just complete this, will the people become aware, become, say, nationally conscious and say, I belong to this country, if they don't see anything of themselves in it? We didn't fall from the skies, did we? We had contributed. If you look back at the history of the Chinese and Indians who came to this country and contributed to the economic development, not political, because they were also citizens of China and India, but the way they contributed to the economic development of this country is enormous. We must acknowledge these things to say, yes, yeah. You people helped build up the country. And we'll put in a chapter or two. We are not denying take away Islam and take away Malay history. Keep all that you want. Put in a couple of chapters and tell us, look, this is a chapter on how our non-Malay brothers came to this country. They got a better life, but they also contributed to the development of Malaysia.
Right. And on that note, can I get you to elaborate on those chapters? Because, again, there's been a lot of calls for a more inclusive history textbook, one that is Malaysia-centric, if I may quote an expression that was used in the foreword of your book written by Ranjit Singh Mahi, who is a historian who's written about factual errors in history textbooks.
As an aside, he has written so much. And every time the people from the establishment have called him anti-national. Is it a fair accusation? You know, he's just telling you history is, these are the wrongs that are there. Please correct these dates, collect these facts, and introduce a little bit of history of the plural society. And does it mean we are anti-national?
Do you think there will ever be corrections in that sense? Do you think that there will be, from what we've seen in the past and then now here we are, do you think that we will move towards a more inclusive history textbook?
I don't know. That is a very important question for us to ponder about over here now, because we would see that there were a lot of NGOs, like there was a campaign, what do they call it? I can't remember the name of it, but I know I had it somewhere. Campaign Sejarah Malaysia Benar. They wanted some campaign to say, what is it? Campaign Sejarah Malaysia Sebenar to call for a balanced account. In 2016, an association called the Association of Voices, Peace, Conscience and Reason also called for a history forum to discuss how we can create the right history textbooks and bring in a sense of belonging, sense of history should be about nation building, and history should be about a shared narrative, meaning let us have an inclusive history. But all these things were just ignored. But if now you ask me what could be done to correct these things, I think the first thing is our leaders must accept that we are a multicultural, multi-religious society, multiracial, multicultural. They must accept that fact. And once that fact is accepted, then you can set up a collegial team. You see, for history writing, I think Ranjit has pointed out, if you look at his writings, he said that to write some history, the latest history books, one committee just had about 18 writers or panel, of which there was only one non-Malay.
So more diversity.
Yeah.
In the history textbook writers.
Have some alternative opinions, right. Hear about it, debate over it, include it.
All right. Dr. Santhiram, unfortunately, we've run out of time, and I want to thank you so much for sharing your insights with us on the show tonight.
We should meet for coffee or tea somewhere and discuss this.
Absolutely. Penang moving into phase two, maybe phase three or phase four.
But I don't know whether they could allow us to travel even within the state.
Thank you for your time. That was our conversation with Dr. R. Santhiram, wrapping up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutan, signing off the evening.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for watching the show, and good night.
Night.
Thank you.